welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. I'm going to warn you ahead of time for today that today's episode might make some of your head spin. But in the world of professional discourse, isn't that a good thing? In our pursuit of increasing our lethality and conquering all the different challenges that lie ahead, we must reevaluate how we conduct operations. We may find that there is a more efficient way to conduct these things. That is why today we're going to challenge the notion that being black on ammunition is indicative of a critical shortage or potential shortfall in supply. The 2nd Infantry Division Artillery Warfighter Exercise 22-02 showcased how they are able to achieve mission success with all their objectives through unconventional forecasting techniques and in-depth ammunition analysis. With me today to discuss this concept of being black on ammunition, green on forecasting, I have with me virtually Lieutenant Colonel Michael M.J. Jackson, who wrote a Chief of Staff of the Army recommended article for April 2025 by the same name. Lieutenant Colonel Jackson is a native of Nacogdoches, Texas. He earned a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science from the University of Texas at Arlington and was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Quartermaster Corps through ROTC. Additionally, Lieutenant Colonel Jackson has also received a Master's of Science graduate degree from the Texas Christian University. His previous assignments include Fort Stewart, Fort Hood, JBLM, and Korea with deployments to Iraq and Kuwait. He currently serves as the G4 Supply and Service SMS Chief for America's First Corps, headquartered at JBLM, Washington. I'm so excited to have you on the show today, sir. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me here. I appreciate you taking time out your day to go over some relevant information and be able to share some shared understanding with some the great team across the force here. So again, thank you. Happy to be here.
Of course, sir. And it's just, I'm really glad we're able to do this. Once again, this episode just highlights how, even though we're on two different sides of the country, we can still come together, have this conversation to really showcase just a different way to do sustainment. But before we get into the concept of being black on ammunition, I want to highlight to the audience, you know, what it was like for you to be selected as the Chief of Staff of the Army's recommended article of the month.
So, I mean, I'll be honest, being selected as the CSA recommended article of the month, it was very surreal. As actually one of those moments where you stop to kind of ask yourself, is this really happening? Like, I never wrote the article expecting any kind of recognition from anybody. I wrote it because I saw a real gap between sustainers and, for me, the FA, the field artillery community, specifically in how we forecast ammunition and how our decisions kind of shape the combat power. And I just wanted to help our units avoid friction that we experience. So when the CSA's team highlighted as one of the top 5 articles across the entire Army, it hit me pretty hard. And I was, to be honest with you, I was very humbled and honored and grateful to somebody or to something out of a problem-solving event or exercise that, you know, the Vardy and 2ID, they have an impact far beyond our formation. So for me, the real win wasn't the award itself. It was knowing the article helped people, units that I've never met, tighten their forecasting, avoid things like risk, and become more lethal, because that's a part that feels unbelievable.
Exactly. And you're like, it really shows that it's good to and acceptable to, you know, to challenge these common notions. That's the whole point of this professional discourse is, hey, like, I have an idea. It's not, you know, this doctrinal idea, but it's something that worked for us. And it shows how it really gets after the CSA's intent of what the Harding Project, what we're really getting after is like, hey, we want you to have this professional discourse to talk about things that might not be doctrinal right now, but hey, this is something that worked. Let's evaluate this and see if we can find a better way to do something. So it's awesome that you were able to get recognized for, as you said, stepping out of your comfort zone of writing. And that's kind of my next point is like, really, what got you into writing?
Oh yeah, that's a great question. And so what pushed me into writing was simple. I would say impact at scale. So you can brief a room, but you can coach a unit, but when you write, you can actually help soldiers that you will never meet in places that you may never go. And I think that's powerful. But I'll be honest, I wouldn't have written an article without a push from some, I would say, professional giants. I didn't know them at the time. They were actually, so one person is Lieutenant General Retired Buchanan and Major General Retired Longo. So they were our senior mentors during the warfighter exercise, the 22-02. And they basically, I went in, I say some things sometimes. We had an AR and I stood up and I made a comment about ammunition forecasting and how that was probably one of the single most important things throughout the exercise. They stopped me afterwards and said, basically, MJ, what you and your team just did with ammunition forecasting is different. It's unconventional and it needs to be shared. I didn't know what he was talking about at that time, and they regressed to tell me that I needed to write a white paper. I didn't really know how to do that, but they said that they would assist. So they were very helpful in assisting. Then my brigade commander at the time, Colonel Pasquale, another FA officer, he kind of doubled down with him and told me, you have something here that can help the Army and you need to write it. So that kind of really set the tone for, you know, me writing. So that's what I did. And then to this day, you know, continue to get published. Two other mentors that continue kind of at scale helped me to get my writing across and advocate are Lieutenant General Schmidt. She's the headquarters DAG2, who believes in power and preparation. So that's kind of what the paper is about. It prepped this whole battlefield right there in terms of ammunition forecasting. And another, the last giant would be my old mentor, Lieutenant General Smith, who was the previous Forescom DCG, now I believe Western Hemisphere Command DCG. So I wasn't trying to be an author. I was just trying to make someone else's fight easier than what ours were. And if my writing gave even one unit an edge, then it was worth it.
And I think your story really highlights to the community out there. It's like, you do not have to be an author to tell a story, to get your innovations out there. I mean, so many of these great articles that I see come across our desk here at Army Sustainment is just from just people who have never written before. They went through an exercise or they're doing something just like what you and your team went through and realized, hey, we learned something new. Let's tell our story. And they never written anything before, but they've had this great idea and they've gotten out into writing. And that's one point that I really wanted to convey to the community, is that you do not have to be a professional writer to write. You don't have to be a professional author to get published. It can be as simple as, I have an idea, working with a great team, just like you talked about, all these great mentors that you had who helped inspire you and helped you and your team get this concept from an idea to publication and eventually being selected as a CSA recommended article. You weren't a professional author, but you got through the writing process, and that's all it is. It's just getting an idea from draft to publication. And I think your story really highlights the community, just how just working with people around you, you can really get an idea into print and just the impact. I mean, I bet you never imagined that you'd be sitting here on a day talking on a podcast about something that happened a few years ago.
No, I agree. I agree with that. Like, it's profound that you say that, because it's like, yeah, I never expected to, again, it to go anywhere else, but to be able to speak about it right now and continue to talk about what it means to me and what it did throughout that time frame of the exercise, and have other people reach out to me, it's very rewarding. That it's helping other units be successful and not having them to recreate the blueprint on something.
Exactly. I mean, that's how part of my journey started. I was a little first lieutenant over in Atlantic Resolve, and I was watching how customs clearance operations were being conducted, and I was like, there's got to be a better way. So I wrote an article about it. And then I remember at the time, my mentor, the S3 there, at the time, Major McDaniels, now Lieutenant Colonel McDaniels, was like, he told me, hey, if you write this, get this published, you're probably going to get into writing some more. And I always joke, I was like, there's no way of that. And here I am now as the military editor in chief for the Sustainment Journal. How simple just that one article I wrote in the Spearhead newsletter set my path forward to where I am now.
I agree.
And then, so before we get into the actual exercise, in the main core of this, my last question on that is, what advice do you have for those who are just getting into writing?
Yeah, so my biggest advice to anybody getting into writing would be, don't wait. So I think too many soldiers think writing is for someone else, for experts, for senior leaders, other officers. But I think the truth is that the Army runs on shared understanding and experience, and then we lose so much when we keep our lessons locked inside our own formations. So I would say write the thing you wish someone had written for you, similar to your analogy that you said when you were as a young first lieutenant. So appreciate you sharing that story with us and how that resonates with people. So write the blueprint that you wish you had before your rotation, your employment, your exercise, your whatever it is, because somewhere out there is a unit about to fight that probably the same exact fight you did. Because history repeats itself, right? And your words may be the reason that person or unit or organization succeeds. So it doesn't have to be perfect, but it just has to be honest, useful, something that you think might be helpful. And then I think if we can do that, then we're already helping build a more ready Army.
Yeah, it's perfectly said, sir. Like I talked about it in a few podcast episodes about unlocking the history of all these past articles, like everything that we're doing now, we got to write about it so that our children's generation doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. Like we're learning from those who came before us, from their writings. So let's write about what we're doing so that the next generation has this information, has this knowledge, so they can continue the fight forward and doesn't have to continuously reinvent the wheel.
I agree. And I completely agree.
Now, as we kind of get into this, the point of this, the true point of this exercise or this episode is really like, it's going to make some people's heads spin, like I said at the beginning, but I'm really excited to talk about it, is this concept of being in black on ammunition and what your team did. But before we get into that, can you walk us through this Warfighter 22-02 and your role in the exercise?
Yeah, absolutely. So in Warfighter 22-02, I served at that point in time as the S4 for Devardi for 2ID over in Korea, Camp Casey. A role that sits at probably the intersection of logistics and long range fires, I would say, which is I think very fascinating place to operate. Our mission spanned from multiple phases of the operation. My job was to basically synchronize sustainment across the division fires formation, which meant forecasting ammunition for the MRS, orchestrating resupply with a 210 BSB in Camp Casey. And essentially function as a connector tissue between the division's fire plan and the sustainment enterprise that basically had to power it. So in Devardi, you're not just counting the rockets, you're influencing tempo, range bands, targeting options, and survivability. So every forecast, which I learned greatly from those FA officers being a sustainer, changes the fight. So and every shortage becomes a risk decision, and every resupply becomes more of an operational choice. So it was one of those, I would say it's probably one of the most complex and reward missions I ever had. And it's basically what inspired the article in the first place.
Awesome. So there's definitely going to be some sustainers out there that when they hear black on ammunition is a good thing, they're going to lose their minds. So what do you have to say about that?
I say you're exactly right. I'm laughing because I still hear it today. I mean, that's a good catchphrase, right? So when sustainers hear black on ammo, I think you can practically feel the blood pressure spike across the room. It's like nails on the chalkboard, right? I would say here's the plot twist. In fire's world, black doesn't mean failure. It can mean precision. It can mean effectiveness. It can mean you use exactly what you needed to win exactly what you needed. So being green doesn't necessarily matter if the effects you deliver don't achieve the commander's objective. While being black might mean you executed the fire's plan perfectly. And now you're ready for the next resupply window. That's the mindset shift. So sustainment isn't just about status. It's about synchronization. It's about thinking like a maneuver commander, or in this case, a field artillery formation from that perspective, where the question isn't how much do we have? It's more of, did we get the effects we needed? So once sustainers, I think, understand that nuance, they can go from reacting to the fight to actually shaping it.
So you think this is only the concept you're discussing right now with being blocking issues? Is this going to just work in the fires world, or do you think this would apply elsewhere?
I think it can apply elsewhere. I think like the topic of black on ammunition, green on forecast, and the concept in itself, when readers see that, they actually gravitate to it because they want to have a greater understanding of what that actually means. Because when you say black or ammo, I mean, that usually affects a lot of maneuver force, or basically the entire fight. Because it's like, how are we firing or winning the fight without the ammunition? So I think that's what helps a lot of people gravitate towards the topic of seeing black or ammo. Like, what are we doing if we're black or ammunition? And what does that actually mean? That might mean that we're winning the fight, and we might not need to conserve more ammunition because the fight is over, and that's the part of the fight that we're in. So I do think it applies to the entire Army, and the way and the reason a lot of maneuver folk gravitate towards the topic itself, as well as sustainers.
Through this lens, you're looking at it as black on ammunition, green on forecasting. That's the unit is achieving mission success, meeting their objectives.
Correct. That's exactly well stated.
Perfect. So then can you walk us through these forecasting techniques and like that in-depth ammunition analysis that your team used to be able to achieve that?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So during the division, the warfighter exercise itself, we moved away from the traditional straight line method. So this is straight line method of forecast ammunition, pretty much like a method that assumes a steady consumption. That approach, it doesn't survive contact on like a LISCO large scale combat. So instead, what we did was we kind of broached from that, and we built a more of a phase based volume of fire forecast model to tie it directly to the targeting cycle. So we analyze every phase, and offense, defense, transition, and we projected 96 hours out, round by round, by DODIC, and based on the effects a division needs to achieve. So this shift that we did, from my perspective, it allowed us to predict ammunition shortages 2 full days earlier than the old method. So I think that's what really got across to like some of those senior mentors. So in LISCO, 2 days, I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but 2 days in LISCO can be the difference between synchronized fires plan and division that can't deliver effects on time. So we essentially created a predictive sustainment model that told us not just how much we were going to shoot, but when, why, with what ammunitions, then align to our maneuver and targeting plans around that. So I think that kind of helped out and mold the whole topic of the forecasting technique.
But pretty much you guys were ahead of your time when it comes to predictive logistics and precision with sustainment then.
Yes, we were. Yeah, we were doing things that people are doing now, just way ahead of our time. But it was good thing. So a lot came from it. So, yeah.
So how would you say, like, now that we're these terms, predictive logistics, precision sustainment, are like, you know, the flavor of the day, or the new word of the day, now that we're really utilizing them, especially when it comes to the way we're able to use data, how does that tie into your experience more? Like, does it change anything that, like, how we're defining these terms from what you experienced?
Another great question. So I think predictive logistics is exactly what enabled us to stay lethal, even when we were black, by sustainment metrics. So by synchronizing the targeting cycle, the volume of firing modeling, and daily end-of-day ammunition counts, we could do a few things. We could tell commanders when we will run out, which effects we could probably still achieve, and what operational things would buy back time or distance. So that precision sustainment, putting the right ammunition at the right place, at the right range band, at the right time. So instead of aiming for the green metrics, that's what everybody's trying to achieve, right? So instead of aiming for the green metrics, we aim for predictability. So instead of fearing we were black on ammunition, we embraced it. We embraced it as a signal. So you use exactly what you need to accomplish the mission. Now, what comes next is how we kind of thought about it.
So then how does this tie into the, you know, required supply rate, the RSR, and like the controlled supply rate, the CSR? Like, how does that all tie in?
Yeah, so that the whole RSR and CSR, as you're well aware of, I think this is a controversy and misconceptions. So I think one of the biggest, you know, gaps both between sustainers and, you know, firing formation is, like, so you have the RSR, which is the required supply rate. What is the maneuver force needs? What the maneuver force needs to meet the mission? And then you have the CSR, which is the control supply weight, or what higher sustainment levels allow you to fire based on the stock availability. So the misconception is most units treat RSR like a spreadsheet calculation, like linear predictability. But in real operations, ammunition demand follows more of a bell curve, not a straight line. So it surges in certain points, and it dips and it changes by phase. So people have to get that mindset that everything's not going to be straight line. It's going to change by phase, phased operation, and let's go, by target set, by range band. And then for CSR, I think the misconception is that it's just some kind of supply annoyance that we came up with. But during the warfighter, I would say that the CSR, at a CSR imposed at the sustainment stock level, meant that we were going to go red and eventually black on, like, the critical long range munitions. That wasn't just a logistical issue. That was more of an operational risk decision that affected how the division fought. So once we framed our reframe, it said like that, once we reframed the CSR and RSR as operational tools and not admin products, it changed the entire tempo for the fight.
All right, yeah, because I know it's, I like how you talk about it. This is just being on Excel, just that calculation for the Excel, because so many people get confused by that, and they, I don't know, being in the schoolhouse, I've watched, you know, just watching students who just, like, get so much into the weeds of those concepts, and just watching how your team was able to kind of change the notion of them, and how you're able to look at them, how you're able to analyze them, and how that really helped drive how you guys were able to be successful out there. So it's good, and very much thank you for providing that explanation out there to the audience, because I know that can trip people up all the time, this RSR, CSR concepts.
But just to your point, though, real quick, the Excel piece is good. And I give a shout out to him. We had a lieutenant, he's capping out at that point in time, Lieutenant Lee. He was on another, he was a wizard at Excel. So the document, one of the documents that he helped create, I mean, we had it down to the T in terms of when we would run out of ammunition, by what type of ammunition. So we knew when we would go red, go black, down to the T. So some of the stuff that, to your point earlier, you talked about and trying to do stuff we're doing right now in terms of predictive, and you were doing it back then. So we didn't have Power BI or anything like that, just simple Excel. But we had the information down to the T to where it helped us out in terms of when we knew we were going to go black or when we needed to change ammunition or whatnot. So it can be used, but I just don't think we should get tied down to things like that, though.
Yeah. So since this exercise, you know, was a few years ago now, do you foresee any changes with unconventional forecasting techniques and then the in-depth ammunition analysis that you all used during your exercise when it comes to this transformation in contact we're going to, or large-scale combat operations, anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the evolution, I think, is happening probably faster than ever and faster than most people realize right now. So when we ran the Warfighter 2202, our forecast model, kind of like you alluded to earlier, was ahead of its time. So the phase-based, volume of fire driven, and tied to, you know, targeting cycle. So today, that approach isn't just innovative, it's becoming essential. LISCO is moving towards a battlefield where consumption rates like unpredictability, targeting cycles, And commanders need real-time sustainment awareness to make decisions at the speed of relevance. And now, you know, thanks to some people like DEFCOM, which is a developmental command, we're seeing a major leap in predictive analysis. So developmental command, there's a guy by the name of Mr. Rich Richardson, who works with developmental command. Again, they took a major leap. They're building something called TAMS. So TAMS is basically the ammunition management microservicing. And I think it's be honest with you, I think it's a game changer. It's essentially a system of systems for ammunition logistics and a digital backbone that gives commanders, targeters, and sustainers live visibility of things like where the ammunition is, how much is on hand, what type it is, how fast it's moved from the ASP to the launchers, and what units will need based on current operations. But it's kind of, you know, yes, the situational awareness we always need, but we never had. So during the warfighter, we built out a manual predictive, you know, and kind of, I mean, it uses cell too, but a 96-hour forecast tied to the volume of fire. But with TAMS, that becomes more automated and accurate and available at every echelon, from theater to corps to division to the fire units themselves. So in TIC, what does that mean? That means faster pushes. In LISCO, that means smarter positioning. And then for commanders, it means ammunition is no longer in a black box. It's a live data stream, which all commanders, everybody loves to see right now. So to me, this new system, TAMS, is exactly where forecasting and sustainment is headed. Digitized, centralized, real time. And I believe it's, you know, fully integrated into operational decision making. So we built the blueprint back in Warfighter, and this newness or hotness out right now is TAMS will take that blueprint and turn it into a combat multiplier. But here's the thing I want to emphasize. None of this is done alone. This is the kind of innovation that takes an entire team across multiple branches, warfighting functions, and echelons working together. Internally, what we've done here at CORE, we've been working closely with the DEFCOM team that I spoke about before, and with our own fires and sustainment enterprise here. And I've had the privilege of working directly with our America's First Corps Fire Support Officer, Colonel Grady Lowe, and a Chief Count from 593rd CSC, who is the Senior Ammunition Technician. And we built a tool, trying to build basically a full proof of principle to kind of stress test the TAMS in the upcoming fires heavy exercise called Courage Lethality. And I restate that, the TAMS again, because I know it's a new terminology, and it's a Tactical Ammunition Management Microservices System. So this proof of principle, we will go on to test this Tactical Ammunition Management Microservices System called TAMS. Now, Carl Lowe, me and him like to joke. He jokes me to this day about the old way of war is dead. And while we laugh about it, he's absolutely right. The old way of managing ammunition, linear spreadsheets, like I talked about earlier, disconnected system, blind spots in the COP, it won't survive long-range precision fires in MISCO. We're operating in an environment right now where sustainers must be able to capture real-time data with trackers, digital cops, movement control, a volume of fire updates, and sustained visibility all fused together. And TAMS is designed for that type of environment. The exercise that I spoke about earlier, Courage Lethality, that'll be our opportunity to push it, to break it, to validate it, and refine it, because we haven't really validated sustainment, current sustainable ammunition. So that's how we build the future sustainment systems that the Army needs. And to me, that's really the exciting part.
Well, definitely thank you for providing us that insight into TAMS. So just a good quick overview of it, just really the impact that's going to give to commanders out there. Just be able to, you know, see that real lifetime data analysis like that, and know where your assets are, and be able to see how, and having that, you can better employ your assets, knowing what your ammunition is like, and it's unique seeing how what you all did years ago laid the blueprint, as you said, sir. And that's just the point of, like, when we're going out there doing these warfighter exercises, doing these training exercises, like, don't just look at it as check the box. Like, you're testing new things out there that's going to have an impact later down the road. So it's just, you're a prime example of how you did something now is having impacts later, like years later, but it's way it's truly going to change the game for ammunition analysis now.
Agree. And that's what we need to. We need to be more progressive. I mean, this is it's a new fight we're fighting. So we have to think futuristic and not be stuck in the old nuances of how things used to be.
Exactly. And like, so is there anything that we didn't talk about today, from the writing side of the house or from what you went through with the exercise when it comes to being black on ammunition grid and forecasting that you want to highlight to the community?
I mean, this is my time to give any kind of advice, or are you doing their word on that?
So yeah, I mean, of course, I always ask, you know, what advice do you have to the community? But I just always want to make sure if there's anything like, I missed that point, I want to make sure I tell the audience that as well.
Okay, I got you. I think we have to be open to change. We can't be resistant to change. That's what we live in the United States Army, essentially United States military. One of the things that we do in the military is we have change. I mean, history does repeat itself, but we learn from that history, and then we operate in an environment where if something is not working for us, we have to change and change for the better. So I think we have to be able to move forward and progress from the old ways of doing some things and move towards things like we've discussed around, like predictive logistics and kind of going forward with how we see ourselves, because that's the only way we're going to make ourselves better is by pushing the needle and trying to get better and seeing ourselves to be able to get better. So I would offer up, like you kind of alluded to and discussed before, it take this opportunity from events like this, like an exercise or events that you had, as you talked about earlier, and push forward with it. Because we live in a world where shared understanding is very helpful and might be a game changer to the next unit, the next person, or essentially the next war.
No, exactly. And just, it's all about being 1% better every day, no matter what you're doing. Every time you go out to do an exercise, you know, you're not going to change the world during that exercise, but it's just about you and your soldiers getting that, just that 1% better. So every time you're going through it, you're doing your sets and your reps, you're getting better. You're becoming more lethal. But this has really been a great conversation today. I'm just really thankful we're able to connect virtually like this. And I can only imagine there's going to be a lot more people with questions for you. A lot of cards and letters probably. So where can people find you at? If they have any additional follow-up questions.
So my name is, based off my name, so I'm on Teams. So MIKHAIL, and then last name Jackson. You would call me MJ. So Michael Jackson. So the one and only Michael Jackson, right?
I love that, sir. And so definitely anyone out there, if you have like additional follow-up questions, be sure to reach out. Because I know he'd be very happy to answer if we missed something that maybe you are out there and you have a question, like, oh, I wish they would ask him this question, reach out to him. Well, I hope we didn't make too many people's heads spin with our discussion today. But once again, sir, I just want to really thank you for taking the time to come on the show today.
No, I appreciate it. I did want to offer up one more thing before we go, just because I think it's relevant. About mine.
Of course.
Yeah, so on the lines of, you know, the conversation we had earlier, the only additional advice, at least from a sustainment perspective, or just in general, I would give would be I would say three things. So I think in general, you know, you could learn from this article. Yeah, it does raise a lot of questions, and it does raise a lot of eyes and awareness towards something. But I would say number one would be, you know, stop chasing green metrics. You know, start chasing accurate forecasting. And that's what the, you know, paper comes from, and, you know, talk about black on ammunition, green on forecasting. Just think like that. You know, stop chasing green. So green on ammo, I would say, doesn't necessarily win battles. what predictability does. So if you think about it from that perspective, you know, you can go far. I would say number two, from at least from a sustainment ammunition perspective, would be as sustainers, we have to get into information and into things like the targeting cycle. So if sustainers aren't in targeting meetings, then they're planning in the blind loop. So you can't forecast what you don't understand. I think one of the people to kind of help me understand that really right now, he's the America's First Corps G3, Colonel Andy Knight. He previously 17th Fab, a commander, but basically alluded to that. And that's what we did back then, that we have to be in those meetings. And a lot of sustainers, they don't go to those meetings. They show up at an event and they start briefing off of information they think is applicable. But as a sustainer, you have to be in those meetings with those FA officers. Then you have to talk to those FA officers, get a great understanding of what ammunition means. What does this effect do? What if we switch from this ammunition to this ammunition, what does that mean? Have a greater understanding of something that you don't normally understand. I talked about it in another article, but you know, a lot of sustainers don't understand that there is multiple pieces to our components to around. So just having an understanding with the FA officer or maneuver officer that there's other things that they can help you assist with that. That would be point number two. And then the last point, I would say, think effects and not quantities. So ask, what effect does the commander need? This gets back to talking to the FA officer again. Then reverse engineer the ammunition plan. And I think when sustainers understand the fires plan and fires units understand sustained reality, this is them meshing together, then the division itself becomes exponential and more lethal. I think that in itself is so helpful in understanding to help anybody out on so many levels. So again, those three points are essentially, I think, the success rate for anybody. And again, I appreciate you for allowing me to say those.
Of course, sir. I mean, that's amazing wisdom right now. I do a whole new episode just on those points right there. But I really hope everyone out there takes those to heart and just continues to apply those. I think it's really going to help you be successful out there.
No, appreciate it. And this is, again, I've stated before where to find me, but I actually do a lot more stuff with different supply and services being in my job right now in America's First Corps. So I still do ammunition. So again, if anybody wants to do a follow-on conversation or talk to me about ammunition more in depth, I'm here to assist and actually have some more oversight, being I am in America's First Corps and can oversee ammunition at a larger level. And I'm around some great leaders here too. My boss is Colonel Hutchins. He's the Corps G4, and he's very helpful with being able to help out with things at all levels, all G4, specifically ammunition.
Perfect. Once again, thank you, sir, for coming up on the show. So very honored to be able to have you here with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. This is a great episode and a great thing you have doing in terms of the Logstat. And I venture to say that more people should probably come to this and get a great understanding of the greatness that you're doing. And appreciate you having me on and getting this information out.
Well, very welcome, sir. And thank you for those kind words. It means a lot. I know the team here is putting a lot of hard work together to get these episodes published, and just very excited to continue to see how this podcast continues to grow throughout the years ahead. And like I said at the beginning, it's okay to challenge the way we conduct operations. Our leaders wants us to use discipline initiative to always find the most lethal and effective ways to complete the task at hand. That is the point of conducting training operations, so we can see what works and what doesn't work. You know, we saw it from today's episode. You know, if you have any thoughts on today's episode, then be sure to send us an email at Army Sustainment, found in the show notes. Also, if you have ideas on how to more efficiently conduct sustainment operations, then please write an article about it so that we can continue the dialogue and share our ideas across the force. That's how we continue to be more lethal, and that's how we just continue as an Army, as a sustainment community, to grow and develop so that the next generation is ready. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, sustainment leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.